racing back to the warning track, to the wall. Upper deck, goodbye baseball.
The Jerry DePoto Show.
A tape measure home run by Nelly Cruz.
Every Thursday at 3:30 with Danny, Dave, and more.
The Jerry DePoto Show is brought to you by Metropolitan Appliance and Monogram Appliances.
Streaming on every device on the 710 Seattle Sports app and 710sports.com.
Jerry DePoto is with us, and Jerry, thank you so much for taking the time to join us.
As always, a pleasure, guys.
Well, it was a pretty incredible weekend out at your ballpark, from Ken Griffey Jr. Telling the guys to keep fighting, saying the city needs to keep behind him, to 40,000 people at Safeco Field chanting Sean O'Malley's name. That was a pretty incredible homestand you guys put together.
You know, it's funny you bring up the Sean O'Malley moment. I actually said to Sean after the game was over, I said, how do you not take a curtain call in your town on Ken Griffey Jr. night when you hit the effectively the game-winning homer in that big moment? And he said, I didn't know. And, you know, and then the following day when he went 0-for-4 with a punch-out, grounded into a double play and made an error, he said, 0-0 in a day. I should have taken the call.
I'll tell you what, I was there at the game, and we really wanted him to come out. There was people still standing up. It was really a phenomenal moment.
Great moment. And really, I think I was very happy for Sean that moment happened for him, because, you know, with Marte out, Sean O'Malley did yeoman's work, picking up where we needed him most. He played extremely well, and various days throughout the course of the last month or so, he's been a spark plug for us, and can't say enough about the contributions he's made.
Jerry, how have you done it with the bullpen, all these different names, and boy, these guys are getting the job done.
A little luck. You know, I think in some case, we've scouted these guys extensively, and it doesn't take a rocket scientist to look at Archimedes Caminero and see that he has a very good arm. And he's had a lot of, you know, strings of success in the big leagues. I think we were fortunate to pick him up when we did. He's been excellent in the four innings he's thrown since he got here. I think so far, so good with Tom Wilhelmsen and Drew Storm. And I think there are others that we'll see. It's nice to have Nick Vincent back. We feel like we're likely to get Steve Cishek back for the start of our next homestand, which would be another shot in the arm for our pen. But these guys have been great. The lucky thing, I guess, where the luck would come into play with a guy like Archimedes Caminero is we had talked to the Pirates extensively and in a variety of different trade discussions through July, and ultimately we didn't make a deal with them, but we had talked a fair amount and gone into a good amount of background work on Caminero. And then he went through trade waivers, and we put in a claim on him. We were fortunate enough to be the team that won the claim, and we put together a deal for him. And like I said, he's been great since we got him, and Diaz has been fantastic. And I think our bullpen in general over the course of the last 10 days has been, you know, a star in what we've done.
Well, boy, you gave us part of the backstory on Caminero, but if you could maybe flesh out the details a little bit, because since he's been in Seattle, you look at him and you're thinking, why in the world would any team want to give this guy up?
You know, I think what it was for the Pirates is, I have a real feeling that what it was for the Pirates is they had a little bit of a backlog in their starting rotation, and I believe they were sending one of their starters to the bullpen, and Caminero is out of options. He can no longer be sent to the minor leagues. The rest of their bullpen had performed very well, so there was no clear demotion to the minor leagues. And once we had claimed Caminero on waivers, it gave them an outlet to create the opening that they needed in their bullpen, provided that they were able to put together a trade that they liked. And you know, I spoke numerous times with Neil Huntington. We came to an agreement on names that worked for them, and so far so good. Like I said, he can't be much better than he's been. He's been throwing 98 to 101. He's pitched every game since he got here, and you know, thankfully today we have a day off so that he can take a little bit of a rest. He's been efficient, and he's been overpowering.
Hey, Jerry, I want to talk to you about how you guys handled Mike Zunino. I saw a stat, and he's 11-4 in his 15 starts. And also, you know, you look at how he frames pitches, his defense. And then the other thing is I was really interested to see that starting pitchers have gone six innings or more in 12 of those 15 starts that he's had. Talk about, well, you can talk about his offense too, I suppose.
Well, I think on all those things, he's been terrific. Mike, we never had an issue or question with what he brings offensively. he works very well with pitchers. He throws well. I think he's one of the best pitch framers in baseball, and the data supports that. And he's really grown into a feel. We can even see it evolve through this short season and his ability to call a game at this level. But put that together with the market upgrade and what he's bringing offensively, the quality of Mike's at bats, truly from dating back to April and Tacoma to where we are today, he has come so far in his approach and his consistency. His mindset every day is to have a productive play appearance for the team, and sometimes it results in a homer, sometimes it results in a walk. I do think that one of the things I find most encouraging is that Mike's still going to strike out some, because when you tap into the kind of power he has, you do need to trade some strikeouts for that. But his strikeouts aren't just waiting at three sliders in the other batter's box. His strikeouts are, if you watch his homestand, it has been a lot of grinding at bats where he's getting into a 3-2 count and he sees 8-9 pitches and just happens to get that slider or a fastball on the outside corner that he can't quite get to. But the quality of bats has been phenomenal, and there's a reason why we were 11-4 in those games, and I think largely it's because he's played that well, and he has been right at the center of why we are, I guess, surging the way we have been over the course of the last 2-3 weeks.
Jerry, it sounds like you think that pitch framing is a pretty big deal. And, you know, we've talked to people like, well, you know, the umpire sees it come over the plate, but where are you on that?
Oh, I think it's a real thing, and it's largely because you can see through, as in the league, with the different technology that we have to track pitches, what's in the zone, what's out. And, you know, if you're watching on Root Sports, you can see the pitch locations in the box. Those boxes are real. I mean, those are very reflective of what the actual pitch should be called. And, you know, when you're tracking the data and you've got thousands of pitches that are logged, you can kind of see which catchers are more likely to steal the low strike, which catchers are more likely to frame that ball that's just off the outside corner and get more called strikes. It's sometimes you think it's luck. I frankly, the other night when Wade LeBlanc was pitching, I you could have had a pitchback catch and you weren't going to get a strike call. But the idea being that over a big data dive, you're going to be able to determine who are the best in the league at stealing strikes. And Mike has now had more than ample major league experience to suggest that he's one of those guys that does it really well.
We're talking with Jerry DePoto here. And, Jerry, I have a belief that they need to widen the strike zone for Wade LeBlanc, that when you don't top 90 miles an hour with your fastball, that they should give you a little extra latitude in the width. But it didn't seem like the umpires agree with me on that point.
Nah, you know, Wade's been, I mean, he started 5 games for us. 3 of them have been excellent. One of them was more than serviceable, and he had a tough time in Houston. But, you know, he had a tough draw the other night against Detroit with the strike zone he was throwing to and the lineup on the other side that was just loaded with the better right-handed hitters in the league. It wasn't a super matchup. And I'll say this about Wade LeBlanc, is that he's given us 3 quality starts in his 5, and in each of the starts he's made, he's given us a chance to hang in there and win like he did the other night. He doesn't break. He just he keeps on battling. He keeps on finding his way around the strike zone. And there are plenty of starters in this league and have been historically that don't bust 90 with their fastball, particularly lefties who have exceptional changeups. And that's Wade LeBlanc. And, you know, our expectation is that every time he goes out there, he's going to give us the best of what he has. And he's done it every time. And we don't expect him to be Randy Johnson. We don't expect him to be Felix Hernandez. We just expect him to be Wade LeBlanc. And so far, he's done a really nice job of staying consistent with that.
Well, he's been one of the many finds that you've had this year. You've had to cobble together a pitching staff. And I think we're now at the point where next pitcher you use will be the most single pitchers used in a Mariners season. And we still got 50 games left in it. How have you done this, dealing with the number of injuries that you've had? And not only that, but this is just your first year kind of at the helm of the organization, to find the depth that you've needed to withstand all this.
Some of it is just good scouting, you know, having a good scouting department with a lot of information to manage, and knowing that once you get down, when you're in a competitive position in the middle of August like we are right now, I mean, we are in a playoff race, and the sprint is getting ready to start. we're going to get down to these last 2 weeks in August and the month of September. And I've always thought in every playoff race I've been in, whether as a general manager working for a team in a front office or even, you know, in the time playing, once you get down to that last 6 weeks, your pitching, it is wolf pack pitching. You're sending your pitchers out there and they are going until they get tired. And then you've got to have another guy to roll in. And when you have to play the schedule and send guys out, you have to have flexibility on your roster. You have to have ways to create more depth in call-ups and send-downs. And you know, it becomes truly a group of 15 or 18 pitchers that you're going to have to tap into over those last 6 weeks. And nothing looks as good to a major league front office that's in a playoff race as September 1st, because the ability to have extra pitchers on hand so that you're not consistently having to juggle is great. But I can't say enough about the pitching staff, what they've done in aggregate to all year long. They remained among somewhere between 1 and 5 in run prevention. We've done a really nice job of giving our offense an opportunity to put games away for us. And during some streaks like we're on right now, when the starting pitching lines up and gives us 6-plus innings and comes in and has been, you know, as consistent and even recently as dominant as they've been, that's a good recipe for success, and I don't see any reason why we can't continue it.
Jerry, I didn't understand the move you made with Taijuan Walker, and Shannon Dreher and I have gone back and forth on this one. She can't understand why. I don't see why you guys sent him to Tacoma, and I usually lose those arguments with Shannon, but I keep fighting anyway. And my contention is with Taijuan Walker, I've seen the inconsistency like everyone else with Walker. But I wonder how much you can chalk that up to his foot being sore and injured. And for him to come back only one game and then be sent to Tacoma, I didn't quite understand that.
That's probably why we make the decisions we make. We're managing a lot of information. In this particular case, we felt like the best opportunity for us to move forward, we needed to create a space for Archimedes Caminero to join the club. Taijuan had dating back to his final start in April, it had not been a particularly good 3-plus months. And, you know, what we needed was some predictability in what we were going to get innings-wise, because at the time we were working with an 11-man pitching staff. And when you're working with an 11-man pitching staff, it's critical that the starter give you some length. And that's one thing we just haven't been able to rely on with Taijuan Walker. We were fully of the belief that his injury is not an issue. He wanted to pitch and said he felt fully healthy, both publicly and privately. So we ran him out there, and he did not have a successful start. And as a result, we were scrambling to get that Wolfpack in place, and Taijuan happened to be the guy with options, and he went to AAA. And similar to what we did with Mike Zunino, similar to what we did with James Paxton and DJ Peterson and so many others, the hope was that some exposure to our minor league systems and the things that we're doing that might help toward resetting Taijuan. And whether that's 2 starts or 4 starts or 6 starts remains to be seen, but we still feel like he's a big player for us as we move into the future.
Jerry, that's also probably got to be one of the toughest things you straddle as a GM. You have to look at long-term development and preparing a guy, but also the short-term reality of needing to put what you see as your best 25 pieces out there and how they fit together. And probably this time of year, that becomes as difficult as any to balance those things.
Well, that's it, and we made no bones about it. I know Scott said it publicly. We talked about it internally. These are decisions that you probably don't make if you're 15 games out of the playoff race, and you know, August and September are formalities. You're playing for 2017. You create opportunity and you let people learn on the job. We don't really have that luxury when you're in a playoff race, and you know, you have to take advantage of these moments when they're there for you. We're not going to forsake the development of a young player. You want to give them opportunity. But like I said, with an 11-man pitching staff, you can't really cover the down moments. And you know, we needed to be in a position where we could find a probable solution. And we had other options in-house in terms of guys like Wade LeBlanc, who has no options. We can't send him to the minor leagues. You know, we had guys that Aaron Miranda was coming off of a very good start against the Boston Red Sox. And we're going to run him out there and see what happens and give him an opportunity, because he's shown us no reason to believe that he's not capable of running with it for a bit. But most importantly, we're trying to acclimate these guys to get through the next 3 weeks or 2.5 weeks. So once we get to September and we have the ability to stretch out a wolf pack, but it is, and when I say wolf pack, it's just having more than your typical 11 or 12 pitchers, every one of them who can pitch in and pitch 2 innings, 4 innings, the starter can go 6, you know, and on the day where the starter goes short, we're covered. We are starting to build in flexibility, and that is one of the reasons why we felt a guy like Ariel Miranda made more sense for us where we are now than Wade Miley. He was a more flexible, optionable player who could really help in the short term, either as a starter or a reliever, knowing where our organizational issues or lack of depth lie. And we're just trying to set this up for both the present and the future. It felt like he was a smarter alternative. And sorry you don't understand the option of Taijuan Walker. This is about the 2016 Mariners being in the best situation they can be on August 11th. And we feel like if he goes down and does the things that we've asked him to focus on, he'll be a part of it again in the not-too-distant future.
Well, there's a lot of things that Jim doesn't understand, you know. So we,
that was
a great answer. No,
that exactly cleared it up for me. I owe Shannon an apology.
You've been set straight.
Yeah, hey, Jerry, Sean O'Malley, you were talking about earlier. Boy, you talk about a kid that's easy to root for. Just love him. But have you, in your career, seen, because he's 28 years old, sometimes you see guys take a big step, you know, at all different ages. You know, sometimes it's the second year, the third year. Have you seen an example of a guy that later on, you know, maybe he's been grinding away in his late 20s, he just gets it?
Paul LaDuca, you know, Dodgers and Mets was like that. Randy Velarde was like that, I think, to a degree. Could I argue Mike Gallego was like that back in the day with the Oakland A's? And Sean O'Malley has really been a nice story for us, and then was toward the tail end of last year. He battled so long through the A and AA levels, was in the minor leagues for a long time. I signed Sean as a minor league free agent about 3 years ago, and he made his major league debut for us then when I was working somewhere else. And in the time since I've been back here, Sean has really, he's learned how to control his motor. He's always been a great makeup guy who's going to give you everything he has. The quality of his at-bats have been awesome. And, you know, here, just this last 10 days, the power surge of Sean O'Malley has been awesome. But I wouldn't anticipate that that's a big part of his game. But he will grind through at-bats. He's an above-average runner. He's the most versatile defensive player on our roster, which is why he's been here all year. And we'll stay. And I think the improvements that he has made as a shortstop, if I had to point to one real positive defensive development that we've had all year long, it's what Sean's done as a defensive shortstop. He's been terrific. He, like I said, when we needed him to step up, he stepped up. And he's in addition to being easy to root for, he's very easy to like when you get to know him. He's humble. He knows who he is. He's thankful to be where he is every day, and he wants to do something else. It's just what his position's about.
A couple more questions here for Jerry DePoto. Jerry, that game on Wednesday, it's the 12th time your team has come back to win after trailing by 3 runs or more. That's the most in the major leagues. Is there a trait that you look at and find in your team that explains its ability to dig its way out of holes?
These guys are—they're rubber. They bounce off their floor, whatever that is. And you know, I've said it for weeks now. There's as every time you see the group starting to tire or fade, there's one moment, and the moment isn't always delivered by Kyle Seager like it was the other night, or Robbie, or Nelly. Sometimes that moment is delivered by Adam Lind or Sean O'Malley or Michael Freeman. And to me, that's something that's starting to happen. It happened for us frequently in May. It's starting to happen for us again frequently in August. And that to me is the trait of a team. The 25 guys who play together every night, they believe in one another, and they trust. We're starting to see that same conga line mentality form that was, you know, prevalent for us back in April and May, that maybe disappeared in June and is now showing back up again. The quality of the at-bats has been really good. And I think the most encouraging thing for me over the course of you know, the time since the All-Star break is we haven't been as reliant on the home run as we were early in the season. We're starting to do a better job of manufacturing runs. We're still a home run hitting team, but we're starting to do a better job of manufacturing runs, and we're able to win close games as a result. And you know, it's still fun to see the 3-run homer that ties the game, and that's great. But we've been getting a lot of contributions up and down the lineup that have been very encouraging.
James Paxton taking that line drive off the elbow. A lot of people wondering about his condition. It sounds like it's better than what was initially thought.
Quite a bit. You know, James, he played catch yesterday softly. He's going to throw again today and probably already has because we're getting on a bus here in about a half hour. But swelling was down considerably yesterday. He looked like he had an elbow instead of a puffy mass. And he felt, even after the there was no break, we did an x-ray, pretty clean. James is a gamer. He was in the training room afterward and felt pretty confident that he was going to be able to pitch again shortly. Now it's just a matter of getting him into a position where he's able to repeat his arm action and spin a curveball. And, you know, obviously we're gonna skip this start or at least push it back. He will not start this weekend in Oakland, but we are tentatively planning to have him pitch sometime shortly thereafter, likely in Anaheim, provided that he is making as much progress as it seems he's made at this point.
And once you bring Miranda back into the rotation, you'll be short a lefty out there in the bullpen. I'm hoping you bring up Vendetti just because I want to see this this ambidextrous, amphibious guy in a Mariner uniform.
And I think it'll be fun to watch him next to Caminero. You know, Caminero's is a giant who throws 100, and Vendetti is a really athletic 6'1 guy who throws 83. You know, sidearms from both sides, the right and the left. Great makeup, and he's got a really good history of matching up against left-handers, both in the minor leagues and in the major leagues. And I don't know, as I said to him the day we acquired him, I don't know if he'll be here in two days, 2 weeks, or on September 2nd, but he will pitch for us in the big leagues if he's healthy. We see value in his ability to match up. And I, too, I've never had a guy who throws a both hands. I'd like to see it.
Yeah, it would be good. Jerry, I want to thank you and congratulate you on accomplishing something that countless managers have failed to do, which is to make Jim understand something when it came to Taiwan Walkers.
Thank God, and he'll stop arguing with us.
Yeah, it was worthwhile, and all of us would see. If nothing else, you can say that you accomplished the impossible today, Jerry.
It'll be the only day like it in my lifetime.
All right. Thank you very much, Jerry.
You got it, guys.
That was Jerry DePoto with us on the Venue Kings hotline. Was that mean or dismissive, Jim?
Do you find yourself amusing?
Sometimes.
I think it's hilarious.
Yeah. It's usually when
You look like a little boy who's been admonished sitting in the corner.
I still disagree with the decision.
Wait, you just said you understand.
Well, I understand what the team's point on this, but you mean to tell... is he off the phone?
I'm sure he's fervently listening in his car.
I'll still bet with both hands that Taiwan Walker's better than Wade LeBlanc and Ariel Miranda.